everything's bigger and brighter, especially our passion for special education. As always, a warm welcome to our listeners.
We are your statewide special education liaison team, here to elevate the conversation one story at a time.
Our mission? Not just to share, but to connect, representing the special education community across our state. We are here to say,
Texas may be big, but its heart and stories are even bigger.
Join us on this journey together. Let's celebrate.
Just kind of go around and introduce who's here in the group. I'm Patty Garcia, Region 14, and we do have a special guest.
So I am Angie Thomas. I am the Special Education Behavior Consultant here at Region 14.
I'm Monica Quesada from Region 19 here in El Paso, Texas.
And I'm Jen DeLeon from Region 17 in Lubbock.
And also with us,
I'm Cody Martin. I'm the other Special Education Liaison here at Region 14.
We did invite our special guest, Angie Thomas from Region 14, our special consultant, because we really wanted to kind of connect the dots for our audience with Merkle's story. Angie has done a lot of work with them. She's our Service Center Behavior Consultant in Special Education. So she's also going to share some things with us too, that maybe you as an audience can take back and use at your districts or even just as parents as well. So Angie, can you start by introducing yourself and sharing a bit about your background and experience in the field of special education and behavior consultation?
Absolutely. So I've been in education for a little over 22 years. I spent 12 years in the classroom. 9 of that, I was a special ed certified teacher. I had my own special ed classroom for a while, but then I went back into the gen ed setting. We did inclusion at all the campuses that I taught at. So I was special ed support inside of the classroom so I could, you know, play that dual role. And then I've been at the service center. This is my 9th year at the service center. And so I spent the first 3 years here as one of the curriculum consultants and then moved into this position. So as far as my behavior consultant role and I just naturally have gravitated to kids with challenges in the classrooms. Even when I was a kid myself, I was the one that was tutoring other students. I was the one, you know, intervening and helping my peers. And then that just kind of translated into my teaching career as well. And then once I came into the service center, just being able to go and get as much training as I possibly can. I'm a lifelong learner. I'm constantly reading and just growing myself. And so I am, and my friends here don't even know this yet, so I'm going to let a secret out of the bag. I just started working on my doctorate. And so I'm getting, thank you.
It is exciting.
So I just have this passion for kids who come from backgrounds of trauma, which a lot of our kids, we know, especially after what happened a couple of years ago, most of us have experienced some level of trauma. So I am getting my doctorate in community counseling with a concentration in traumatology. So these are just the kids that I really have a heart for and the adults working with those kids. I just want to be able to give them the tools. I know oftentimes when I was in the classroom, I didn't have the tools or I didn't know where to go get the tools. And so I was constantly searching that out for myself. But I know that teachers are under a lot of pressure. So if I can help with that, that's what I want to do. So.
Okay. I want to clarify something real quick. You said your doctorate in community counseling. And did you say traumatology?
Traumatology, yeah.
Okay, can you explain that just a little bit?
Well, it's through Liberty University. So this is brand new. I think we're actually the second cohort to go through. And so everything that we do is based on and through the lens of trauma responsive evidence-based practices. Everything is, we talk and work through research through the lens of multicultural settings and lenses. And so nothing's off the table, but it's more also about bringing, it's almost like wraparound services. So it's about bringing everything and everyone that is involved with this person into the problem solving process and being able to truly build a support system that includes that community lens, but the foundation is on trauma.
So thank you for investing in that.
So I'm excited.
So Angie, a few weeks ago, liaisons had the privilege to hear from Merkel Middle School's success story on changing the climate and culture of their campus. You have been credited for being a part of the success. What are some high points that you think would help our districts or help those districts out there that may be struggling with the climate and culture in their schools?
Okay, first of all, I just have to say, like, what an honor and a privilege it has been for me to work with Merkel Middle School. I actually lived in Merkel for 17 years. I taught on that campus at one point. So I had a personal investment in that campus and in that community. So this work was very personal for me. But I would say, just starting with leadership, it starts with leadership. And it takes time. And I think we live in a society right now where everything is so, we need it to be automatic. And complex change takes 3 to 5 years. And so through your conversation with Merkel, you know, they're moving from year five, we're into almost year six of implementation. And in the middle of that, we had COVID. Mm-hmm. So it takes time. It takes everyone feeling like they have choice and ownership and voice and autonomy. And so if you're going to start looking at a system change and specifically culture and climate, those things have to be in place. And what that means for leadership is you have to be vulnerable. You just have to be vulnerable. And I think that that's one thing, you know, when Corinne and the assistant principal that was in place at the time, when we first started having this conversation, the very first thing I said was, we have to base our decisions on data. Well, what does that look like with climate and culture? Well, we need to do a climate and culture survey. So we did that. And then when they pulled that data, man, it was, you know, not what they were expecting. I think they were expecting some of it, but they really weren't expecting the degree of what was
honesty.
Shared. Oh, yeah.
Honesty.
Yeah, yeah. And we even could look at, because I was not on the campus and I wasn't in the day-to-day grind, I could see things from a different perspective and through a different lens. And so that would be another thing I would say, is they need to partner with their ESC, because you need someone who isn't in it and doesn't have, you know, for lack of a better term, skin in the game, to be able to see things differently. So for example, and this is kind of a simple one, there were, I think, 40 plus staff members, because I told them they needed to include cafeteria workers, anybody that had access to students and student success, they needed to be surveyed. Well, so there were 40 plus people and only like 17 filled it out. So not even half.
Yeah.
So we kind of talked about, what does that mean? What does that tell us? And then as we were going through some of the responses, you could get a sense that there was a collaboration of some sort. So maybe there was a group of people that were sitting in a room that were having, you know, a conversation, and one person was putting it all in, which was fine, because I said, my perspective is, doesn't matter. We need this, good, bad, and ugly, to really get a feel, take the temperature of what's really going on here. And so to be able to be partnered with me at the time, so I could look at that through a different lens and say, this isn't personal. We have to go back and think about, look at how many principals have been in the leadership seat or seats, because the AP position was, you know, revolving mm-hmm. door also. If you lay all of this out on the table, ultimately what we're looking at is abandonment. We have trust issues for adults. Mm-hmm. So if the adults don't trust the leadership, this ship will not sail. You're stuck. So that's where we have to start. So we had to really take a step back and say, we can't just jump in and start PBIS. We've got to start having some different conversations about building trust between administration and the teaching staff. And at the same time, start moving into this space of creating this leadership team. So it's okay to go slow, to go fast. And that's something that I say all the time. So that's probably the underlying, being able to take a step back, ask the hard questions, and be able to hear the hard answers, and then unmask that. What does that really mean? You know, unpack it.
I want to comment here, because like your experience, your 22 years in education, it's definitely telling the story of how you approached Merkle. And I would imagine how you approach probably any district or person that you're going in to work with. And time is one of those things that we complain about in all facets of our life, right? There's never enough time. But slowing it down the way that you're describing, I think it's just so powerful in that you're giving time to people. But, you know, when you think about across your experience, across your career, what are some of those big challenges, like the ones that you really see come up over and over again in school districts that maybe our listeners can connect to and say, yep, that's me too, you know, we're not alone out here, you know, whether it's students in special education or even otherwise. Can you think of any that you could share with us?
Well, the biggest one, obviously time is the biggest barrier, right? Another one that hits often and is getting bigger and bigger and bigger is just challenging behavior. Lack of time, you know, kids are not meeting expectations. The behaviors are getting bigger and they're happening younger. I think oftentimes teachers feel like they don't have the resources, they don't have the training. And something right now that we're running into a lot is there aren't substitutes. So to try to pull teachers away then turns into, it's not that it can't happen, but we have to be flexible. And so maybe inflexibility, that rigidness that we sometimes find ourselves in, because we're trying to, you know, beat the test or whatever. We have all of these things and we have timelines, and I totally understand that, but that's something that we run up against time and time again, is if the teachers are out of the classroom to go get this training, that means that they're the experts, and I get it. I was a classroom teacher. They're not in the classroom giving instruction, and those kids are going to be held accountable. Therefore, the school's going to be held accountable come testing time.
Like we're chasing after two carrots. Behavior takes time, but academics has to be fast. It's that whole thing you were just talking about.
Yeah.
You said something about behaviors happening younger, Angie. Is it certain behaviors that we weren't used to seeing?
Oh yeah. I mean, and when I talk to other behavior consultants, you know, across the state, they're seeing the same things. We have kids that are coming in, you know, that are already addicted to drugs. We have kids that are, you know, clearing rooms and they're five or four, you know, throwing chairs, banging their heads up against the walls. They, you know, they don't have the social emotional regulation skills, which, I mean, none of them technically have that anyway, because their brains aren't fully developed. But we're seeing behaviors coming now into schools, but I'm just more and more, we're getting calls, kids younger and younger, you know, cursing out teachers, hitting, being physically aggressive and violent towards their teachers and also towards their peers. it just has trickled down. I am seeing more and more also kids who are homeless, kids who are being abused both physically and sexually and emotionally, verbally. Lots of abandonment going on. We have a lot of kids that are using illegal substances because their parents are giving them to them, or they're just in the space where those things are happening. And so secondhandly, they are becoming addicted to, you know, the secondhand smoke or the residual stuff that's on the counter, all the things. So
more than ever, ESC has always been important, but it's almost even more as a push in now because our teachers cannot leave to get the training to deal with these issues, but they're real world, right? We can't educate a child till basic needs are met. And those basic needs are, they're struggling for bigger reasons than they even understand, but to push in as an ESC and come to the teacher and come to the school to provide those resources is an even bigger critical need right now.
Yeah, most definitely. I that's probably where I spend the majority of my time is going out into classrooms or, you know, at least starting the conversation. One of the great things that has come out of COVID was being able to Zoom with people or, you know, get on Google Meets or, you know, using that digital space to start some conversations, allow me time to maybe do some research or kind of get some things together before I go out and really utilize our time better. But I do spend a lot of time in the classrooms coaching and modeling and working with administrators on how to work with their teachers. And it's I think completely changed the face of, there's not a lot of stand and deliver. I do a lot of that training in the summertime. It's more in the moment, on the job training, if you will, which is great. It's powerful.
Absolutely.
I want to go back a little bit to you had mentioned when you were kind of describing the work situation or the situation, I should say, in Merkel. You had mentioned that they were, you know, it was a revolving door for administrators. We had changes, constant changes. We had abandonment issues. We were trying to cultivate that trust just to be able to move forward and to be able to get to where we needed to get to. The surveys you mentioned were not, you know, you only got less than half. And you said there was a lot of good, bad, and ugly. And I guess my question is, when you go into a campus or when you go into a district and you start working with people in that same situation, a lot of times as an administrator, you don't want to talk about it because it's like, no, you don't really have a problem. There is a problem, but it's not with me. It's with someone else. But yet it couldn't possibly be my fault, but yet somehow it might be. So basically, as an administrator, we're having to put ourselves out there. We're having to make ourselves vulnerable and we're having to make ourselves hear things that we don't want to hear. Tell me a little bit about, in the case of Merkel, I know Corinne came in and said, okay, we have to make changes. Don't know where to start. Called you in from the leadership perspective. Can you explain that just a little bit?
So are you asking me like what's my approach to that?
What's your approach to that when we know there is a leadership issue? It may not be the current leader in place, but it has been that leadership issue because like you said, these folks were facing abandonment issues. They didn't trust the leadership. And so when you go in and you're having to guide those changes and you're having to have these hard conversations with leadership, you understanding that it's not that current person's issue, but it is their problem.
Yeah, that's a great question. Okay, so that was really the perspective that I took was we have to keep in front of us, this is your problem. You did not create this problem. And this is your ship. You are the pilot of this ship. So let's lay out what are all the things that we see. And just, you know, we just went through every comment, we kind of, you know, categorize some things, which that survey is great, and it's very dense. And so it puts everything, you know, groups all of those responses together. But we just really went through that. I will say, though, if I back that up a little bit, I try to create relationships myself first with those administrators. So it's not really just me coming in and saying, you have a problem. It's not your problem. I mean, it is your problem, but, you know, I'm not doing that. I really start by creating a relationship with the administrators first, and also asking them, you know, what do you want? What do you want for your campus? You're an administrator for a reason. What is your why? And then to be able to tie that into, okay, so part of that is I'm going to ask you to be vulnerable, and it's not going to be easy, but by me creating a relationship with them and modeling that trust and that safe space, we have the space where they can be open and they can be honest and they can say the things that are on their hearts and in their heads, and it's not going to go anywhere. So they're able to be vulnerable with me, I guess, first in a safe place. And then we can talk about what that can look like with their staff, because we ask kids to be vulnerable all day long. We ask kids to take risks all day, every day. And oftentimes we don't, as the adult, and I know early on in my teaching career, I didn't think about this consciously, about creating that safe place for kids to take risk. I just knew I was supposed to ask them to do it. And so that's what I did. And so I think that we kind of model that. You do what I ask you to do, but yet we don't do those things ourselves. So going back to it, it's a top down. And if as an administrator, I can't be vulnerable, then how can I ask my teachers to be vulnerable? And how can teachers ask kids to be vulnerable and take risks if we're not as adults willing to do that? So I'm pretty vulnerable. And I mean, I'm a 7 on the Enneagram and my color is orange. And so I just put it out there. And I understand that everybody doesn't do that, right? And that's also part of the most important work that we do, especially in this space that we are holding right now in education, because we are running so fast at all the things that we're leaving behind the fact that we are working with human capital. And so if you're an administrator, you're, you know, directly underneath you is that classroom leadership. And under that are the students that we serve. But I don't take that word serve lightly. I serve the people that I work with. And so I think sometimes that's been stripped away from the work that we do. So when I go into to work with administrators, I start myself with that relationship and modeling a relationship that I only had with one of my administrators in all the years that I taught, and knowing how powerful that was for me as a teacher. I just model that, because that's the same thing that has to happen with the teachers, and then it just trickles down to students. So that's kind of the long answer of that's how I start the work with them, to model with them being vulnerable, you know? And I use examples from when I was in the classroom. I was very vulnerable with my students. I asked them when I got finished doing an assignment or a big project with them, I asked them to grade me. How did I do on this? What were the things that I did well as a teacher? What else could I have done to do this better? What did I miss? You know, and I have a lot of kids that would say, man, you missed a really good teachable moment the other day when XYZ happened, and I'd be like, oh man, eek. So if we want those things to happen with our teachers and with our students, we have to model that as leadership too. Mm-hmm. So I just try to start by doing that with the administrators.
Right. And I definitely agree with you. You know, we're asking our kids to be vulnerable every single day. And even as a teacher in the classroom, it was like, nope, it's do as I say, not as I do. And that is that mentality that we have to kind of get away from, because, you know, and even as an administrator, it was like, oh yeah, I want you to do this, but I'm not going to do it myself. I'm not going to put myself out there like I'm asking you to put yourself out there. And so that can definitely create some challenges. And just, you know, I'm a 7 on the Enneagram and I'm a green. So I'm very analytical, very, come on, let's get this done. I'm a problem solver. I don't have time for this. So it's interesting that you know, things like that happen. So when you're working with districts, when you're working with, is PBIS the only direction? Are you using other evidence-based strategies? Are you, what kind of, I guess that first question is, yes, PBIS. Are there others that you try to focus around, or is it just PBIS that you try to focus around? Let me ask that part. And then the impact that you've seen as you work with districts when you're trying to make these changes.
Okay. So yes, there are other things that I do. My other love, because it's so powerful, is restorative practices, because it's, again, it's kind of like an onion. It's super layered, right? You can do lots of things with restorative practices. So I'll give you an example. We have an elementary school that I've been working with pretty much since I came into this space. And about 3 years ago, the principal called and said, okay, the wheels are falling off. I've been here for a while. We've got a grade level that's just, I mean, they're awful, they're toxic, all these things. So what are your thoughts? And I was like, well, what about restorative practices? Because this is impacting student performance as well. Absolutely. So we put a plan into place, and it was basically a 3-year phase in plan. So again, it's okay to go slow, to go fast. Mm-hmm. And I also wanted the teachers to see the mileage that they can get out of restorative practices, specifically the circle process. So the first year, and I partnered with our ECSE consultant. So the first year we went and we did just community building, social emotional skills circles. So we trained the staff, and then we went back and we, you know, gave feedback. We went back on that year. We actually went back in the middle of the school year and did like a little follow up training with them, did some problem solving with them. Inside of that, because there was this rift specifically with one grade level, they started doing restorative circles, the community building piece, with the adults during PLC time, staff meetings, when they had some things that would come up. If it was just a couple of them, the counselor and the principal, sometimes the principal was in there, sometimes she knew that she didn't need to be in there. They would pull just the people in that needed to do that restorative circle, and they would do a restorative circle, community building, repairing harm circle with those teachers. And so that was the first year. Then the second year we went and we trained in the summer. So we trained during their in-service time. We took the same system, same process, and we taught them problem solving circles. So they were already kind of doing those as adults, but now we're pushing that into their classrooms. So we did problem solving circles. So they worked on those for a year. And then this last year we implemented instructional circles. So they're not required to do all of those circles, but they are required on that campus to do at least one circle every week. And an administrator, somebody mm-hmm. checks in, the teachers go, and they sit in on circles with other teachers, and they learn from each other and, you know, beg, borrow, and steal from each other. And we have watched, and it's great being the outsider coming in, because I know how I feel as an outsider, right? And so when I walk in and I walk onto the campus, I'm like, brr, it's chilly in here. It's cold in the atmosphere. And we do the training, and then we allow them that space to practice and to learn. And we come back in and we, you know, we model and we practice and we do with them and observe and give feedback. And then we leave, and then we give them some more space, and then we come back in, and you can feel the temperature rise. You can feel that climate and that culture shift for them. That's been very powerful. So they, you know, I'm in very close contact with them. And so every once in a while I'll get an email or I'll get a phone call from the counselor, from one of the teachers that will say, okay, you know, this is the first grade and this is, we're thinking this. What do you think about this? Absolutely. Okay. Can you help us with? Yep. Absolutely. So, you know, just providing that ongoing support, but you can watch that thermometer change. And now when I walk onto the campus, it's like, oh, wow,
it's day.
I love this. Yeah, this feels comfortable and cozy. And I don't get all the pricklies when I walk in. You know, some schools do the paint the rocks and, you know, they give little inspirational rocks or whatever. And all that stuff is great. But if it doesn't really hold meaning, if it really doesn't change the climate and culture mm-hmm. on the campus, then it's just stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's just wall decorations. So when I walk onto that campus now, I know, like even I, as and I'm not really an outsider anymore, but I walk in and you just feel it. Parents walk in, you can feel the difference when the secretary has a completely different demeanor because she's a part of the team. She's included in the circle time. That changes how she sees herself as the first person to receive people when they walk in the door. That's it. That's huge.
Yeah.
So everybody's impacted. And I love it. So that's another big one that I love.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we're going to have to get you a t-shirt that says like the queen of adaptability. Because it's just so many examples that you've given where you come in and you listen first and you watch first and you pay attention to all the nuances happening around a school, in a school, and including everybody that could, again, support kids, that help them grow. You know, and as with the adult level, with the adult area, you've already kind of really shown us what you do with adults. And I can only imagine how amazing that is, what you do with children. But let's step back. And I want you to just think about something that maybe has happened with kids with disabilities, a way that you've maybe had to look through a different lens. Even just one example, I know our listeners want to take away everything you've said, and then they want those little nuggets that they can put in their pocket. But maybe something you've done when you've worked with a specific population or a variety of them that just really got some great results for those students and the staff.
Okay, so there's two things that come to mind. The first one is kind of a collective moment. So it's an activity that I don't even remember where I heard this, saw this, participated in. It was a long time ago. But it's something that I do. I do it in my PBIS work, but I also do it just when I'm working with, especially if I'm working with a group of adults that are really having a hard time pushing through the empathy part. And it's called the DOT activity. And so you take all of the kids. So like if you're I'll just use middle school as an example. So junior high and high school, middle school, high school, secondary, whatever. And I can say this because that's the group of kids that they were my group of choice. Sometimes when kids move past, you know, fourth grade, fifth grade, as educators, we suck the joy. We just suck the joy out of things. Okay. And so that's not my personality, obviously. So the DOT activity is with a middle school specifically, you just take all the sixth grade roster and you just put it on the wall. They're, you know, a list of the kids, and the seventh graders on a wall and the eighth graders on a wall. And every teacher, depending on how big your school is, every teacher gets 5-10 dots. And just, you know, those little like garage sale dots. And they can put their initials on them, write their name, whatever. And the eighth grade teachers only get to do eighth grade because those are the only kids that they've had. But the seventh grade teachers get to do the seventh grade and the eighth grade kids because they've had them in class. And this doesn't have any, because like in a small school, you know, you have outside connections. So the first go is no outside connections. We just want to know about school connections. The sixth grade teachers can put, they start with their sixth grade kids, but then they can also go put dots on the seventh grade and on the eighth grade, okay? So they go and put a dot next to a kid's name that they feel like they have a positive relationship with. So if that kid was in trouble and the principal needed somebody besides themselves for that student to go and make a connection with, that teacher would be somebody that they would say, yes, I could be that person for Patty, okay? Mm-hmm. So you do that, and then you just have all the, at once they put all their dots up, you just have them step back. And I will tell you, the first time I did this, like teachers just standing back and they were just scanning around the room. You could just, from across the room, you could see kids who had no dots by their names. And when you have 50 teachers and you have a kid that doesn't have any dots
no
by their name.
Dots.
Oh, well, here's the thing. Here's what, and this is the craziest thing. It's happened every time I've done this. When the teachers go and they start, because that's data, right? So we disaggregate
yes.
that data. We talk about it. So sixth grade teachers, let's go look at your kids. Seventh grade teachers, go stand by your list. Eighth grade teachers, go stand by your list. What do you notice? And I don't say anything. What trends do you see? Every time they will say, the kids with the most dots are the kids who get the most office discipline referrals. Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, not every kid, but the majority of the kids who had the most dots beside their names are the ones that also walk the green mile more than anybody else
that
on
is,
this campus.
That dot represented the teacher feeling they could make a connection with that kid, or
no,
I have had to make,
they've
already had to make a connection. Wow.
Yep. Yeah. I already have a connection with Patty. Mm-hmm. I already have a connection with Cody. I don't think that I have like a tight positive connection with Monica. So I'm not going to put a dot by Monica's name. Okay. So then they start looking at the kids who have the fewest dots or who have no dots. And I'll tell you probably the most powerful moment. And as the teachers are looking, they see this one kid, and the principal said, you could see them all looking
mm-hmm.
at this one kid's name. And the parent of that child who had no dots by their name was also a staff member on that campus. So we talked about that. And what does that mean? Does that mean that that kid is a, you know, has behaviors? No. And what the teacher started to realize is the things that they were saying, and not just about that student, but about some of the other kids that didn't have dots by their names. Well, that kid doesn't cause any trouble in class. That kid's self-reliant. That kid. And then they're looking at me, you know, and I said, okay, but here's the thing. Invisible kids do invisible things. And so because that, not one adult in this room put a dot by those students' names, who do they have a positive relationship with? Well, and the parent of that student couldn't put a dot by their kid's name because that's their kid. So you, that I took that off the table. For
right.
them. So then
right.
we use that to fuel the work that the teachers work on. Again, this is not, I use it as part of PBIS, but I've also used it outside of PBIS just to talk about culture and climate. When we have kids that don't have a positive adult on the campus, then we've got to intentionally build relationships with kids. And I think the further away we've gotten from, you know, like the 80s and the 90s, maybe early 2000s, sometimes when I do trainings, I have teachers that say to me, I don't need junior high friends, or I don't need, you know, 4-year-old friends, or I don't need, I'm not asking you to build friendships. I'm asking you to build relationships, because connection is that's the one thing that we know in our brains answers the question, do I feel safe and do I feel loved? And that gets me out of my brainstem and out of my limbic system up into my prefrontal cortex where I can learn. So when I walk into classrooms and kids are struggling, the observations I make are the kid doesn't feel safe and they don't feel like they're seen, heard, and valued. It's not that they won't learn, they can't learn. So we've got to take a step back and we have to build connections, which is found in relationship, before we can even get to the content. We try to, in education, we try to separate academics, behavior, and mental health. That's like taking a kid and dicing them into pieces. I can't separate those things. I'm Angie Thomas. I am a whole person, and that includes my mental health, which is connected to my behavior, and that is also connected to, can I learn?
Yeah.
So that DOT activity, man, I'm telling you, the next thing you know, the teachers are like, hey, you know what? I can build a relationship with this kid. And so they started like, he's going to be the kid that this is the kid I'm going to intentionally try to build a relationship with. And so the next thing we knew, by Christmas, every kid had dots by their name. At
least
one.
Did they get 10 more dots, Angie? Did they get 10 more dots, or they moved their dots?
Well, so I kind of let them decide how they want to go back and relive that moment. It's hard if they use all different colored dots to go back and do it again. So they can go, like, sometimes they go in and they'll put, like, beside each kid's name, they'll just do a blank one again. But then after the teachers have gone and put their dots, then they'll go back and, like, the administrator will go in and put, okay, so Angie last time had 6 dots by her name, Patty had 7 dots by her name, Cody had 2 dots by his name. And then we look at, okay, so last time Cody had 2, this time he's got 8. Okay, we're good. Right. And so it's just this constant motion of, are we intentionally trying to stay connected, adults to students? And then, my next level of that is I want to take that to kids. I want teachers to do it with kids, but I'm not real sure, like, I'm really going to have to think that through.
And when you do, we'll be back.
Okay. Yeah. But that's kind of the next level of that work, because it seems like such a simple activity. And that's what Cody and I were talking about. It seems like such a simple activity, but it is probably one of the most powerful activities that I've done with adults to bring in that connection piece, and really make it visible for them.
Mm-hmm. I want to highlight what you said about, I'm not asking you to build friendships. I'm asking you to build relationships. One of the things that I know, you know, that we heard all the time, and we stress in workshops, and we stress, you know, as leaders, know your kids, know your kids, know your kids, know the baggage they carry, know what they come to school with, know what they are missing, know their needs. But nobody really stresses building that relationship with that child. Once you get to know what baggage they bring with them, what are you supposed to do once you know the information that you need to know? What are the next steps on that piece? I think that we forget that because we don't want to get involved, or we don't want to be viewed as part of the problem. We want to try to help, but not knowing what to do, what those next steps are. And so I think that's what I wanted to highlight, was that important piece. A relationship is not the same thing as a friendship. You know, a relationship is that connection to where we are helping kids move forward instead of being their friend and just, you know, passing happy-go-lucky time. There's a difference, and we definitely need to stress that difference. So thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I know, Monica, you were wanting to say something, so I'll let you say something, and then we'll close it up. Because
thank you so much. We really could. I could listen to you forever, Angie. I honestly could. I think your energy is phenomenal. and your passion for what you do is just so amazing. But, you know, I will always defend and always say, because I was also a teacher, that teachers come with the biggest heart, and our intent is always to have those relationships, but it gets lost in the busyness of other stuff, education, you know, the education part being a part of it, but then we forget. And so just this one little nugget that you've shared gives us the opportunity to go back to why we went into education, which is about relationships with kids. And I can see people saying, I'm running to Walmart, I'm running to Target, I'm going to pick up those dots, and let's start at whatever scale we can, because it just puts you back where you want to be, which is making sure kids know that they're loved and cared for in school, right? I think that's amazing. Absolutely. Thank you, Patty, for letting me
finish that. So one of the other things I want to, which they'll hear as they listen to this podcast, but you spoke about safety and creating a safe space and relationships and going from, you know, starting with the administrator and then the teachers. And that's what Corinne mentioned too, when she shared her story, she gave power to those teachers, and those teachers in turn gave power to those students, and they build leadership within those students too. So what you're doing is impacting a large amount of people, and hopefully our listeners are impacted by your story and Corinne's story as well. I know that Cody and I appreciate everything that you've done, and we're so blessed that we, you know, we get to call you coworker, and I'm blessed that we, you know, that I get to go and observe some of the things you do and help out with some of the things you do. Yes, this is just a little nugget of the skills and some of the things that I've seen you do and talk about. And we go on forever because there's so many things that you can do with kids, but I think you nailed it. It starts at that moment of just having that conversation and building trust and making it a safe space. So thank you, Angie. Any last words?
You're welcome. No, that's really, if there's one takeaway, it's about holding the space and being safe, being a trusted adult to adult, and adult to student. It's all about not just relationships, but it's about the connection. Mm-hmm. And so that's where it starts. That's where culture starts. That's where learning starts. That's really the foundation of everything, is being connected with each other. So,
yeah. And we will have you back, because once a sped talker,
always a sped talker.
That's okay.
Well, I love you. Y'all.
All right.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you so much. That was really fun. Thank you, Cody.
And that's a wrap on another enlightening episode of Sped Talk, where every conversation, every story we share is a step closer to a more inclusive and understanding world.
Stay connected with Sped Talk on Facebook, Instagram, X, YouTube, and Spotify, or wherever you find your favorite podcast episode. Thank you for being part of the Sped Talk family. Stay tuned.